Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
And our political commentator, Rod Oram, is with us in the United States of America live. Hello, Rob. How are you?
Rod, happy New Year to you.
Sorry, Rod. I was softening the blow with a bit of Barry White there, and the beef and the Barry White went over to your D and got in the way. Hi. How are you? How's the United States of America? What's happening over there? Government still closed?
Yes, it certainly is. This is now a record closure. The previous record was held by Bill Clinton over 20 years ago. So Trump can claim this is a record.
What was it? What was the situation there? The Bill Clinton closure?
During, I think it was his first term of office, the government was closed for 21 days, and that had been the record. So Trump is setting a new record, and there's absolutely no sign of any shift in position. It's an absolute deadlock. But extraordinarily interesting things are happening, such as Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, the majority leader, has written to Trump saying that because of the government shutdown, security services are understaffed because so many people are on furlough, and therefore the Congress can't guarantee the president's security should he want to come to Congress to deliver his State of the Union in a few weeks' time, and therefore asking him to either postpone it or send a written message. And a written message was how that was done in the 19th century. I think there's probably some safety grounds, when taking those into consideration, it's rather an exquisite barb, I would say.
Yeah, no, that's not what we'd expect. That's not the immediate screaming and yelling you'd expect from the Democrats over there. It's a very nicely well placed little and quite just a shade intellectual, perhaps maybe for Mr. Trump. President Trump.
Yes, absolutely.
what's the for people who aren't aware of how this all is it just about the wall? Is it just about him getting the money to build a wall between the United States and Mexico to stem the flow of the satanic immigration that he seems to paint a picture of?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, that's the headline reason. But of course, what this really is about power. It's about a standoff between a president who's refusing to budge but demanding that the Democrats negotiate. So it's about that. But also, it's only a foretaste of what's going to come this year, because the Democrats, now that are in control of the House, in a position to launch a number of investigations.
And that's what I was going to ask you, Rob. Because from a distance, it feels like a smokescreen for this Russia thing.
In terms of some legitimate issues involved. It is also a distraction from some bigger ones. And one of the interesting changes is that now the Democrats have majority control is, in the Foreign Affairs Committee after 9/11, a subcommittee was formed on terrorism. Well, the person who's now taken over the chairmanship of that committee, Democrat representative from New York City, has said, well, that's less of a threat now, our relationship with our allies is a bigger issue, because that's being imperiled by the current president, and therefore he's constituting a different subcommittee. He's closing down the terrorism one and setting up a committee to investigate the president's fraught relationship with the U.S. allies. And that's a very fascinating switch of political perspective, I'd have to say.
I don't know if I've heard them talk like that about their allies for a while.
No, but quite rightly, a while, talking about 70 years. It was very interesting at George Bush the Elder's funeral at Washington National Cathedral just before Christmas. All the diplomatic corps were there. And the protocol is that the seniority is established by length of service. So you'll get some minor ambassadors from smaller countries who have been there a long time, and therefore they get called up first. But very interestingly, the EU was relegated to the very last speaker. It had been downgraded.
Really?
From, it had been downgraded from a, albeit a collection of countries, to just a multilateral institution. And that almost passed unnoticed. Certainly, it was the German media that reported that.
No. I think it's the it's is it is it the should we put that down to the sophistication of the EU to not drag it into the gutter and have a big squabble about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And
they're so sophisticated, those Europeans, aren't they?
That's right. So it is an extraordinarily interesting time to be here. But of course, in addition to all the politics, there's the impact of the politics on the economy. And of course, as a business journalist, I'm very keen on those issues too.
Absolutely.
And even from the President's Council of Economic Advisers yesterday came a report that the negative impact of the government shutdown is twice as great as had been previously estimated by them, and also that impact is compounding. So as each week goes by, that impact gets greater, and therefore there is a threat that
that's exactly the sort of financial advisors you want.
Yeah.
It's going to be this bad. Oh, guess what? It's as bad again as what we said it was going to be. So, sorry about that.
And because the stimulus from the tax cut last year is wearing off, that's kind of a one-shot deal. And that big tax cut, which wasn't as big as Trump said it was, hasn't had the effect he said it would. It hasn't created a big surge in investment by companies or in higher wages. Most of the benefits have flowed to the shareholders of those companies, and a large proportion of those shareholders are overseas investors. So most of the impact of that tax cut's gone to overseas investors. There is a risk that's now being started to be identified that if the shutdown lasts a long time, now that's not specified, then the U.S. could go into a recession. And that's quite a dramatic, well, that's not quite, that's a very dramatic turnaround. And of course, it's an interesting comment on Trump's economic policy management, because he considers himself, you know, the greatest ever economic policy person. And yet the policies he's pursuing are actually having an increasingly negative effect on the U.S. economy. So, for example, the U.S. trade deficit with China, again used this week, is now at an all-time high, a bigger deficit than the U.S. has ever had. And that's despite all the...
That would be indicative, too, of the business confidence in China being a little bit, they'd be a little bit more hesitant about the U.S., a little bit more, they'd be looking at them in a different light, wouldn't they, if that's the case, straight away.
They're still selling record amounts of goods in the United States.
Yeah, okay, right.
despite all of the barriers that Trump tries in the way.
He would have known that anyway. He wouldn't know when he said it. What's one thing that could happen that would turn this all around? That would turn the government shutdown in the US around, why doesn't someone call his bluff on it? And go, okay, cool, we'll do that, and then just see if he actually even spends the money on a wall at all. And what the dickens is Ivanka Trump got anything to do with choosing who's going to be the new head of the World Bank?
Yeah, exactly.
I just remember that ridiculous piece of news that I heard last night.
Yeah, and I don't think that in any stretch of the imagination she's an expert in international economics and affairs.
I agree with you, Rod. it's getting muttered around that she might have something to do with it.
Oh yeah, no, she's designated to be an advisor on it.
For the World Bank, man! That's the World Bank of the whole wide world! Oh, no.
Just in the same way that Trump was planning to go to Davos, the great January gathering of the economic elite of the world.
What date's Davos? Has it been?
It's coming up, but he's now not going because of the government shutdown. I should just note that the other person in that delegation, there was also a lot of cabinet ministers, but the two non-cabinet ministers, or three non-cabinet ministers who were going with Trump was Ivanka and her husband, and the other person was the deputy White House chief of staff, who is Chris Liddell, a New Zealander, people with long necks in business would remember him when he was chief executive of Carter Holt in New Zealand before he went up to here to the US to be chief financial officer of International Paper and then Microsoft and then CFO of General Motors.
And he got tapped, didn't he?
Involved in politics.
Yeah, he got tapped by Trump specifically, didn't he?
Originally, his route in the Republican Party was with Mitt Romney. And in the previous election,
Mitt Romney?
The 2012 one, he was on the transition team that if Romney had won, Chris Liddell would have helped sort of organize the White House.
Am I right in thinking that Chris Liddell is quite a well-respected businessman here in New Zealand? He doesn't have that sort of dodgy taint that the Trumps have?
No, but it's interesting that he's a great survivor in the White House, one of the
few. Yeah.
He will have a story to tell when this is all over about why he stayed in the White House and why he felt he was being useful. Yeah. That will be an interesting story to hear. But as I say, he is a great survivor. He's very, very rarely identified in the press at all.
I watched the movie Vice about Dick Cheney a few weeks ago, and I mean that's sort of what he did as well. Just keep it, just be there, do the groundwork, but just don't go for the get out of the spotlight just yet, and then just if you need to switch, need to sort of jump to a more successful and maybe less cool team, that's fine. You can just do that. Hey, before we're about to run out of time, Rod, I did want to just get a few thoughts on the great big Euro shambles that is Brexit. What the? Yeah. I mean, firstly, it just makes me feel uncomfortable listening to any information about it anymore. But imagine being involved in it. What's like?
Yeah, the country and all the people in politics and leadership roles have, completely lost the plot on this one.
It's like one of those highbrow political comedies that they'd write over there. It's ridiculous.
But quite a lot of interesting things lie behind it, one of which is a real assertion of backbench power in the House of Parliament. We haven't seen for, I'm going to say, hundreds of years, because governing parties have ruled their caucuses with, fists of iron. And that's breaking down. Burko, the Speaker of the House, very interestingly, in the last couple of weeks, allowed a backbencher to bring an amendment which passed. And that horrified the political establishment. So this is very transformative and turbulent times in the UK too. And the options now run absolutely from the UK crash of Brexit, of the EU without any safeguards at all, which would be an economic and political disaster. One possibility is the EU might give a bit, but I'd be reluctant to see that. I'd be surprised to see that happen. Another possibility
is they'd be getting sick of doing that already.
yeah, absolutely. They're trying to, safeguard their union altogether. And the other possibility is that Parliament itself might try to override the government. But again, May is right that what was on the table was pretty much it, except for crashing out of Brexit. Whether there is a general election is also very muddled, because neither of the two main parties want a general election, which is a very strange position to be in. It's the most extraordinary, gripping British politics I've seen in my lifetime.
How long before it just becomes completely ungripping? And just like, oh, get it organised, you grown-up adults.
No, I'm
no,
I
mean, no.
That's not an option, because I don't think anybody I don't think anybody left to step into that role. I think this is, you know, this is the political equivalent of street fighting, you know, barricade to barricade, and it's.
They need to do what they're really good at. Some people over in Great Britain are fantastic at those fantasy football leagues, where you just take people's attributes and you put them together in a virtual league. Yeah, maybe it's the same with political parties and just run the whole thing virtually. Oh, it's going to work a lot better, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah, actually, you're onto a really interesting thing there because. This is such an extraordinary time that you could imagine a government of national interest, a coalition.
I've got two words for you, Black Mirror. Right, have you seen? You know, like all those things that seem so outrageous on Black Mirror that in a couple of years are going to be not that outrageous. Just saying.
No. Yeah. Indeed, reality, whether it's in the US or the UK or in some other parts of the world, completely transcends fiction.
Hey, Rod, thank you very much for spending so much time talking to us this morning. I realise that you're enjoying the wonders of the United States of America, and have a good rest of your trip. And thanks a lot.
Yes, thanks. I'll be back home at mid next week.
Well, if you're back home, that means you'll be back at BFM. See you then, Rod. Hooray.
Okay.
You just saw a bit of political commentary.